let's rewind the clock then. February last year. In fact, let's just go back before that. What on earth were you doing in Wilmore, Kentucky around that time?
That's a good question. So my wife and I, who's here, who you'll get a chance to hear from her soon. So we had just moved to Kansas City in 2019, right before the start of the pandemic. And during that time, the Lord put it on her heart to continue her theological education. And so she was studying at the Asbury Theological Seminary online. And so as we're approaching summer of 2022, she gets this brilliant idea to move to the middle of nowhere, Kentucky. Now, you have to understand, even in the U.S., we don't even know where Kentucky is on the map, right? Let alone Wilmore, which is one of the smaller towns in that state. There are maybe two traffic lights and a subway, which is like a sandwich shop, and that's it. And a bunch of buildings dedicated to studying the Bible. And my wife, being the nerd that she is, she was like, George, I would love for an opportunity to study in person. And I was like, babe, as a family of six children, and we have a very, very full life. We just bought a new house. We're getting rooted and settled. This doesn't sound like the Lord at all. It's like, we need to just stay. And so her and her very persistent ways kept bringing it up. And then she began to reveal more that the Lord had actually put it in her heart that we were to be there. And I was like, what do you mean, the Lord? It sounds convenient to now introduce Jesus into it, right? She's like, no, seriously, George, I believe that we're supposed to be there, and there's something that we're supposed to receive while we're there and also impart while we're there. And I was like, okay, but couldn't we do that from here? You know, prayer, we could just stretch our hands to the east and just, like, pray for that. And she's like, no, seriously, George. Long story short, she was like, hey, just consider it. Pray about it. The very next day, she comes to me and says, hey, there's housing available at the seminary for us to stay in, which is rare because our family is so huge, it's hard to find anywhere that could fit us all. And she said, there's a spot that has opened up. I just got an email. We should definitely consider it. And I was like, but babe, so we're going to pay for a mortgage in Kansas City, but also this apartment in Wilmore? Like, the numbers aren't adding up. And then she said, but what if we would just maybe put our house on Airbnb or something and see if someone would rent it while we're away, and that would help offset the cost? And I said, okay, babe, just look into it. Look into it to see if the numbers make sense. Let me know, and then we'll kind of pray and decide from there. The very next day, she comes up to me with these wide eyes and says, George, I'm so sorry. And I was like, oh, Katie, what did you do now? Like, she's like, well, in 3 days, 7 UPS workers or FedEx workers are going to come live in our house for 3 months. And I was like, what? I was like, are you serious? And she says, but look how much money we're making. We're going to make so much money. I was like, oh, my gosh. So in 3 days, we literally stage our home and prepare it for an Airbnb situation and drive out to Wilmore, Kentucky, and we get there, and we felt like the Lord had, like, kicked us out of our home and brought us to this place. And while we got there, we had a sense that God was on the move, because the very first thing we were invited to was a 5 a.m. prayer meeting. And we're like, oh, Lord, you're going to move in this place. Like, we just felt such a spirit of expectancy among some of the students there. And at that moment, the Lord whispered to me, George, make sure you build friends so that when I move, you'll recognize people in the room and you'll be able to connect with them and host me together with them. Because I had the sense that there was momentum already in the atmosphere and we needed to catch up. And so straight away, we got connected to prayer meetings. Thankfully, as a homeschool dad, I was able to kind of move our schedule around quite a bit to get connected. We got connected to a gospel choir, and that quickly became like our spiritual family. And before we knew it, the Lord broke out and did an amazing work while we were there. And so that's kind of how we got there.
Yeah. And from randomly ending up in Wilmore, Kentucky then, you're actually drawn into the very sense of what the Spirit really begins to do. So let's talk about the day before, February the 8th, I think it was. That makes it the 7th. Just talk us through something that happened then.
Right, absolutely. So so that morning, I get a call from Benjamin Black, who's the director for the gospel choir. And we were already slated to sing the morning of February 8th, that Wednesday morning. But he said, hey, George, do you by chance have an opportunity to come through Tuesday afternoon to come sing the Black National Anthem for an event. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. Mind you, Kentucky isn't necessarily known for Americans that look like me. It's very, very, very whitewashed. There are few blacks that are there, and those that are there are actually descendants of slaves. And so when we were when I got this call, I said, hey, sure, I'll come out. And he said, by the way, we need you to sing all three stanzas. And I was like, oh, man, you're checking my black card. You want to make sure if I'm all the way black to make sure I know the whole Black Negro National Anthem. And thankfully, the lyrics were there. And now, mind you, I'm thinking this is like a nod to Black History Month. Like, it's the thing that we do in America, right? February, all of a sudden, the black people come out of nowhere. And we just, like, kind of, in some ways, parade them on stage. And then right when March comes, we don't hear about it anymore until another year, you know? And though there are points of pain there for us, for sure, I feel like, hey, it's better than nothing. And I was invited to come, and I'll go. And sure enough, we get there. And it turns out that this event is called a witnessing circle, where a black Kentucky pastor, along with the university president, had curated excerpts from the Kentucky records, from the archives, of the wills of slave masters that were bequeathing their slaves, their property, to their children. And I wasn't ready. So I go up and sing the Black National Anthem, and there's just like a heaviness in the room, because we're reading verbatim the letters written and the wills written. Like, all my dark-skinned slaves go to that son, and my light-skinned slaves go to my daughter, and along with a sack of potatoes and a red wagon. Like, it's the most inhumane thing that you can sit and listen to. And I come up on stage, and I sing, lift every voice and sing, till earth and heaven ring. And as I make my way through the anthem, I start marveling at the wisdom of God, that he had selected God-fearing men and women to craft the anthem, that had snuck in through the back door scripture verses into every stanza and almost every line that would tether the black community to the hope of the gospel. And that would be their sense of identity and their anthem. And so I get to the end of the song, and I begin to just break down, just marveling at God's goodness. And then I begin to walk off stage after the song's done. And as I sit down, I feel fire in my bones. And I'm immediately startled and completely beside myself. And I just begin to break and weep, like weep. Now, mind you, this is also not a charismatic space at all. Like, this is not the place for tears and all, like, all of that at all. And so I'm trying my best to contain myself, because I don't want to be a distraction. But at the same time, I'm like, what in the world? Like, God, are you here right now? I haven't felt him that strongly for over 25 years. I was like, God, what is this? Like, you're here. Like, you're here. And I'm just completely beside myself. And in the moment, I'm asking God, why are you here? I'm, like, so confused. And I begin to wonder, like, are people wondering, is this black man crying because of all he's hearing now? He's having a moment, and let's give him some space. And even all those things were egregious. It wasn't that at all. Those tears weren't the tears of the sadness over the horrors of slavery. But it was an Isaiah 6 moment as I'm beholding Yahweh, like, pull up his throne room into this room. And I'm confused. And he said to me, George, I'm here because I came to dignify these stories with my very presence. These stories matter to me. They've been hidden for far too long. They're so important to me, I decided to show up myself. And as he said that to me, I began to weep even more. And I'm like, oh, God. Who is a God like you? That you'd be so humble to come and listen to the stories of humans that you created in your image being passed on as slaves to the next generation of slave owners. And in the midst of that, the Lord saw the heart of a community trying to wrestle with the lingering trauma and the horrors of the legacy of slavery in our nation. And I believe he saw the brown and black brothers turning to the white brothers and sisters. And in that place, he established a resting place for his presence. And I looked around and I was trying to discern, is it just me? Is it everyone? Like, what's going on here? And I tried my best to contain myself. And I get up and I could barely walk back to our apartment. And then before I knew it, we had to make our way back for rehearsal for the Wednesday morning. And that night we prayed and we asked God, would you come and reveal yourself? Come and make yourself known. And as we're praying, we get the strong sense that God wanted to move that next morning, and we needed to pray and make way for his presence. One of the brothers had discerned that there was spiritual warfare going on in the room, and he saw light and darkness wrestling at a moment, and we kind of went in and prayed and prayed and prayed, and it was maybe right around midnight. Our very last prayer was, God, would you just send revival? Like, would you just send your spirit? Would you just move? Oh, we've been praying and asking, would you just move? And truthfully, we had no clue what was going to happen the next day, but we knew that we can always ask, right? We can just always ask, and at any moment, he will move, and when he is, we want to be ready. And so that day before happened in obscurity for months and months and months. Many leaders at Asbury didn't know that happened and weren't connected to how that was really a catalyst for unlocking his very presence in the space that began to host him for those 16 days and beyond. And so that's what happened the day before.
Wow. So there's this moment then of racial reconciliation and the Spirit moving in power. Fast forward the next day then, you've had the rehearsal. Just talk us through the day of the 8th, because it's a regular chapel service at this university, compulsory service, right? And something significant happens. Tell us.
Right. So I have to be honest, I kind of came in that morning a little bit, how to describe it. So context, the gospel choir is probably a little bit more of a gospel ensemble because it's about 7 or 8 voices. I'm kind of used to like 60, 70 deep, maybe 100 deep choirs. And there were a lot of timid voices that were also part of this gospel choir. And we had picked these like classic gospel songs that you kind of post to rock and bop to and do the whole thing. And I was like, Lord God, how is this going to go over? Because this is not the right room for that kind of sound, right? Yet I commend my brother Benjamin Black, because he had received the vision to start a gospel choir so that there would be a better representation of what Revelation 7 will look like in the earth, where there's every tribe, every tongue, every people from every nation gathered around the throne. And so we kind of start off with our high praise, kind of dancing and singing, and the whole room is just flat, like staring at us. And we're just kind of in our own space, having a good time, but it just feels like nothing's translating. And I kind of knew that would probably happen. And then Benjamin Black was like, hey, George, go ahead and go into that song that we rehearsed that I wanted you to lead. And he had kind of twisted my arm because I didn't want to lead. I was more like the gospel choir dad in the back. Wanted to kind of support the younger college students. Hey, go in and sing. Like, I'm getting into my 40s. Like, you 18 and 19-year-olds, you can go ahead and have it. And he's like, no, George, the Lord told me you need to be the one to lead this song. You've got to lead this song. And I had, like, barely learned the song. And as I approached the mic to sing, and it's a song called Mighty One, and it's a song describing in three-dimensional space an encounter with God and the very power of God. As I'm singing this song, I begin to feel what I felt the day before. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. don't do it to me now, Jesus. Yeah. Now, this is a room full of like over 1,000 college students, predominant, maybe 3 or 4 black people in the room. Not that I want to harp on that so much, but it was just very, very, very conservative space. And I began to feel the fire of God. And I was like, God, I don't want to be that one black guy that's just, you know what I mean? Y'all know what I mean. You know what I mean. And then the song is getting ready to end. And the Lord says, go back into the chorus. And the fool that I am, I begin to argue with God. I was like, but no, Lord, like, they have this service down to the minute. Like, there's no wiggle room for an extra chorus or an extra, you know, bridge. He was like, George, if that's the case, then go ahead and put the mic down and walk off stage. Like, if you're here for me, then go back into the chorus, George. And I was like, okay. And the moment I'm so thankful that I was able to hear him and he was able to prompt me, because all of a sudden you began to hear the students sing. It was honestly like the sound of many waters. Students singing, mighty one, mighty one, mighty one, mighty one. And it was a roar of worship. And I was like, what in the world? Where have you guys been this whole service? Like, you know, what? And I was just completely undone by how much these students had, it was as if a lid was ripped off of the room and tape torn off of their mouths, and they were able to sing, and they had found their voice. And they, with everything in them, just began to bless and magnify God. And then I see the speaker come up, Zach Mir Creeps walk up, and I'm like, oh, that's the sign for sure. We need to wrap this up, y'all. We're getting a little too greedy, right? Let's go ahead and land the plane. And as we do that, the chapel coordinator comes up to me and says, hey, George, are we going to close on a song? Like, what's the response going to be? Are we just going to do a benediction? What are we doing? And I said, oh, we've got to go back into the song. Like, absolutely, the Lord is here. We've got to sing. And she says, what song are we going to do? And I was like, well, you know what? I'm not sure yet. And she's like, well, maybe that's a sign you should do a song. Maybe we should just wrap it up. I was like, no. What I mean is there's so many songs that we could sing. Just give me a minute, okay? Give me a minute. I'll get back to you. And sure enough, we go into Goodness of God, and then we go back into Mighty One. And then, I kid you not, like, we were enraptured in the very glory and presence of God. And what I felt the day before felt like it permeated the entire room. And intermittently, our testimonies and people just responding to the love of God and the grace of God and people forgiving one another and people getting on the phone and calling people that they need to release and ask for forgiveness for. And at one point, that same chapel coordinator comes up to me and says, hey, George, do you need any water? Do you need any food? I was like, no, I'm fine. She's like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, I promise you I'm fine. George, we've all decided you're making us nervous. You need to eat something. Please, eat something, drink something. I was like, come on. Like, guys, I'm fine. I'm good. They said, George, you've been here since 9 a.m. It is now 10 p.m. and you haven't left the stage. Can you please go eat something? Go drink something. And I kid you not, I was just completely undone. It was as if eternity had stepped into the room. I completely lost track of time. Because he was there. He was in the room. And that lasted for 16 days. And it was just unreal. Unreal.
Yeah. By the time Rich and I arrived at Wilmore, I think it was probably like day 14, 15. And what you articulated, that sound of like rushing waters, is just, you know, people pouring out the praise of God. It was truly extraordinary. But I think there's something so significant about what happened the day before, of God saying, I'm not going to ignore this brokenness, this systemic injustice, this racism that's like just created so much pain. I'm going to dignify these stories and this moment of reconciliation, healing, and then the living waters begin to fall. Just because you were there for those 16 days, often just sort of like helping lead worship, just talk us through some of your encounters with Jesus in that space, in that moment.
Yeah, you know, If you would give me a moment before I answer that question, I feel this, there's a sense in the room that some of us may be missing the weight behind what we're describing here when we say racial reconciliation. Now, mind you, looking at this room, I could tell that it's a priority for this congregation, and it's one of the things that made it so easy to say yes to come back, because I just remember seeing just the diversity in the worship team when I was here last time. But this is more than just political correctness. It's more than just trying to appease the social conscience of atrocities in the past. This is literally the heart of God. Psalm 133 says, how beautiful it is when brothers dwell together in unity. And it fast forwards to say that that is where God commands his blessing. And there is no greater blessing than the very presence of God himself. He is the exceedingly great reward, right? He's our treasure. And so for us to host his presence mean that we need to learn to host one another. Like, it's a big deal to him. John goes as far as to say, if you say that you love God but you don't love your brother, you are a liar. The love of God is not in you. It's a big deal that there are elements of our mindsets and things systemic in our culture and in institutions that are biased against and for certain groups of people. And we were talking about this earlier, but the only place that you really see that the sons of Adam in all of their various shades that are finally at peace are around the presence of God. Yeah. It's around the throne room of God. You see every tribe, every tongue, every people, every language. And it's because we finally learned how to embrace one another because we've learned how to embrace God. Yeah. And so when we embrace God, he shows you how to embrace a brother that is very, very, very different than you, that eats different foods and dance differently and may even look different, you know? Like, he delights when we gather together in unity. And it's because it's a reflection of who he is. If God had made man in his image, then every man that we see is an expression of the very image of God. And when you only have one type of person or one type of group of people, then you're missing out on the fullness of who God is. And so I just wanted to underscore, when we talk about racial reconciliation, it's just brothers coming to terms. Hey, let's revisit the thing that we've kind of ignored for some time and really work through that so that we can forgive one another. And as we heal and as we become unified and as we become one, as the Father and the Son are one, it becomes a resting place for his presence.
Yeah.
And that's where the authority and the power that the church is missing will actually be restored. I'm fully convinced.
Yeah.
But in terms of encounters, you know, there was one particularly in the consecration room. So the way that it was situated, the auditorium is pretty large, somewhat about the same size as this auditorium. And up, tucked away far away in a corner, was this room called the consecration room, where people would go and kind of prepare their hearts to meet with the Lord before they would come on stage to minister to him. And as I step into this room, getting ready to lead worship, I was like, hey, I'm usually the person helping you minister in this room. I really want to sit and receive and just kind of sit before the Lord. And so as I sit down, there's a sister that comes up to me, and as she's approaching me, I'm almost having a double take, because it seems that she's kind of floating my way. And I'm like, wait, do you have legs? Are you using your legs right now? What's going on? She's like floating towards me. But what was even more bizarre was, as she was approaching me, it was as if someone was turning the temperature of heat in the room, and I began to sweat. And I begin to feel fire in my bones again. I was like, oh no, here we go again, God. Like, what is this about? But this time it was interesting, because I began to feel and to hear a wind. And instantly I thought of Acts 2, with her tongues of fire and the sound of a mighty rushing wind. And the closer she got to me, the more intense it got. And I began to brace myself in this chair. And it was insane. It was just completely insane. As I was experiencing the fire and the wind of God, and as I looked down, as she was placed her hands on my feet, I instantly saw Jesus washing my feet. And I saw him ministering to me. And I was like, God, shouldn't this be reversed? He's like, no, George, sit down. Don't pull a Peter on me right now. Just sit down and let me wash your feet. And I remember feeling the cleansing fire of God. It was as if the coals that were taken by the angel were placed not only on my lips, but on my entire body. And he was purging me and cleansing me and sanctifying me yet again and preparing me to minister to him. There's another time where many days later, I was on stage and I had an instant sense that the Lord wanted the nations to sing to him. And I was like, God, I have no clue how you're going to pull this off because we've only been singing in English. And how's that going to happen? And as I lifted my eyes, I noticed that there's a group. Because at this time, there are people from all over the world are in the room. And the stage is full. The balcony's full. There's not, I mean, it's just it's chaos. But it was beautiful chaos, right? And there's a group of Brazilians that kind of walk off stage and are making their way out. And I'm like, wait, I think they're supposed to come help lead worship. And they've got their big Brazilian flags, and they're just like really proud to be Brazilian. And they're like laying their flags before the Lord. And as they're leaving, I was like, hey, can you, and in my broken Spanish, I'm trying to communicate to them in Portuguese because they didn't speak English either, and we're trying to understand each other. And I'm like, hey, can you come back in? And as we come back in, the Lord starts highlighting people from other nations. And as we're coming back in and making our ways down Hughes, I noticed an Asian guy who was from Burma. Then I saw someone else who was from Haiti. Then I saw someone else who was from Singapore. Then I saw someone else from, I think it was Colombia. And before we knew it, there were at least 6 or 7 languages represented on stage. And we began to sing in our native tongue. And it was so glorious because I believe we were singing, Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. I'm trying to remember the name of the song. Our Father, I think, right? Our Father, yeah. Our Father. We're singing that, and we begin to sing in the different songs. That we sing, Yeshua. So we're singing that, and they start singing in Portuguese, and then in Burmese, and then in Spanish, and then in Haitian Creole. And in that moment, it felt as if God was giving us yet again another dimension of the foretaste of what it will be like to be surrounded by all the different tribes and tongues and nations, even throughout history, present around the throne. And in that place, there was such sweet, fragrant worship, incense arising before his throne. One last one I'll mention is there's a time there was just a quiet ministry before the Lord, and I was playing piano and just ministering to him. And all of a sudden, someone began to manifest what seemed to be an unfriendly spirit. It wasn't the Holy Spirit. And it was a really, really jarring distraction. And the way that the person was shaking, you could tell it was more than just like epilepsy or something. It seemed that there was something dark happening. And instantly the body of Christ was activated. And almost like white blood cells, right? The people of God started surrounding this young woman and started praying over her and blessing her and ministering to her. And in that moment, someone came to me and was like, hey, George, go ahead and start singing about the victory of Jesus. And they were almost trying to like get me to gin up the room because they were afraid that the spirit of fear would spread. And I was like, bro, love is here. Love is in the room. Where God's perfect love is manifest, it casts out all fear. We don't need to gin anything up. And I just stayed in my little soft keys. Like, we don't need to do anything at all. By the time the paramedics come, they were completely confused because as they were describing what had happened to this woman, they could not believe that her vitals were that stable. There's no way. And they were checking her again and again. Maybe they thought that their machines were broken and they like replaced their machinery. Like it was, they were really trying to understand what was going on. They were so mesmerized that they said, you know what, we have to stay. Like, God must be this place. And they ended up staying and worshiping for the next hour or two. And it was profound to see how the enemy was trying to show out, and God took that very thing to bring in some paramedics that really needed to encounter the Lord. I was like, God, you are so creative in bringing the people into the room that need to encounter your presence. I mean, there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stories just like that where tumors are literally falling off of people's necks, like while they're praying and like watching it fall to the ground. And yeah, just incredible moves of God. And every time, just I, I'm I almost can't breathe. Like, it's so much God. I can't. He literally just, like, took my breath away. And it was like that for, actually for many weeks afterwards. And the one thing that I kept wrestling and settling on and just abiding in was just the reality of, like, man, our names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Man, we're loved by him. Oh, we're known by him. And what he is doing here, he intends to do all over the earth. And so, yeah, that was a bit of my experience.
Yeah, final question, because then we want to pray. You had a bit of a vision earlier when Cy Ponsonby was speaking. So I want to maybe just give you space to articulate that. But also, as you've spent time with our family, I mean, a few months ago you were here and you spoke to our worship team and you were at the Seek First Monday night prayer night and you spent time with us today. What do you sense the heart of the Father for our church family is?
I feel beyond honored to be somewhat of a friend from across the pond that would come and remind you all just how much you are loved by God. And I remember coming that first time at the Seek First on Monday night and just stepping into your building and seeing what I'd heard of and then witnessing for myself a group of lovesick worshipers that were desperate to touch God. And I felt instantly just like teleported, if you will, into the throne of God. And we kind of lingered there for quite a bit. We were deciding, do we keep singing or not? and I was like, man, God, you have your hand on KXC. Like in the center of the city, or in London at least, like, you're moving so profoundly, and my prayer that moment was, God, would you pour out your love? And so as Simon was preaching, I began to tremble and begin to weep. Because as he's describing the love of God, I was just being reminded of the intensity of that affection that I felt on February 7th and on February 8th and all those days subsequent. And all the times God had met me as a young boy, and all throughout my adolescence and into young adulthood, and even now as a father and grandfather, I just can't get over his love. I just can't. And before he started preaching, the Lord had shown me what felt like an open vision. It was a bit eerie, so stay with me. I saw drops of blood that were falling down like rain on each and every one of you. And what was a bit odd about these drops of blood is that they were massive drops. And each drop was enough to drench each one of you in his blood. And it felt a bit gory, to be honest. But it was these individual single drops that just would drop on each one of you. And it was just dropping and dropping and dropping. And so this imagery was in my mind as Simon was preaching. And then, as you know, he got to the end part of the end of his sermon. He was talking about that soldier that had given his life and his body was at the very back. And as the helicopter was lifted, that the blood from his body started to pour right in front on the feet of those that had been rescued by him. Then instantly the Lord, it made sense to me that the blood that was being poured out on each of you was him baptizing you all in his love again. That you guys would be reintroduced to the price that was paid. The great price of his blood shed for you, like for individual you, like each of you would be reacquainted with the extravagant love of God, that he would see it fit to sacrifice his one and only son, that he would receive sons and daughters, for Jesus is the firstborn of many brothers and sisters. And my heart for you, KXC, is that you would find such deep rest and solace as you stand before him. There's even a word around blockage and some of us feeling separation and feeling a bit distant or disconnected from the presence or from his love. And I want to encourage you to just patiently stand in his presence by faith, regardless of what may be happening in a room or what you may be feeling in your own heart. Stand on the word, the promises of God, his unfailing love that has been assigned to you will indeed drop and fall on you. And that some of the delay that you're experiencing is because the manifestation of this love is actually not just for you. And I get the sense that there are many of you that are actually like the onlys in your family, like the only one walking with Jesus or the only one walking with God or the only one that is saved. And that which God desires to pour out is for you and for your mother and your father and your wayward siblings. It's actually also for the entire lineage that you represent, that he wants to redeem your entire storyline. Generations of hurt and pain and sin and wickedness and injustice, yeah, redeemed in your story.
Yeah.
And so it takes a bit of time for the Lord to dispense that. And so as you wait, wait knowing that which God has in store for you will go beyond your wildest dreams.
Yeah.
And so wait patiently in his presence. And at the right time, he will indeed manifest his palpable and tangible love to you. And when he does, you'll never regret it.